The night sky burned a livid orange. The intruder stood on the back deck that doubled as a toddler's play area and gazed down the mountain, beyond the small town of Eagle Falls, beyond the lake that slithered between the mountain range and the national park, and watched the wildfire wreak a magnificent destruction. The winds fanned the wall of crimson flames that felled Bear Creek National Park's mighty forest, leaving nothing but a blackened wasteland in its wake. Bordering the park, the popular vacation town of Waterford glowed white, as if scorched by a giant blowtorch. In the darkness, the headlights of fleeing vehicles were like a line of white-hot ants, scurrying one way and then the next, navigating the hairpin bends to reach safety. Why flee something so beautiful, so cleansing? They should embrace fire's power, something the arsonist had learned to do and to do well. Of course, the wildfire was inevitable. The hottest summer and longest drought on record had made the forest tinderbox dry. Everyone prayed for rain, even those without a religion, but no rain was forecast for September. People were calling it the heat wave from hell. The arsonist saw it as an opportunity. All manners of crimes could be concealed by fire, and house fires were the arsonist's speciality. They were more personal, more targeted, and more gratifying. Even if it took detailed planning and the risk of being caught was higher, the result was worth it. The intruder turned to face the four-bedroom bungalow. At 1 a.m, the residents were fast asleep, immune to the smoky night air or any outside noise because of the thrum of their air conditioning units. Most folks around these parts relied on open windows and fans to keep them cool in summer. However, installing air conditioning units was what the house owner did for a living, and he had equipped every room with them. What's more, dense forest hid the bungalow from the road. The family of four would be dead long before anyone had a chance to report the incident to the already overstretched fire service. The prowler swallowed back a cough. The face mask, which felt like cardboard igloo over his sweaty skin, kept nose and mouth concealed. It was supposed to also seal out smoky air and was failing to do so. Over a black beanie, a headlamp produced a focus point of light, enabling the intruder to see without waking the sleeping occupants. A gust of hot wind whistled through the tall cedars and the Douglas fir trees. It shook the stalks of the shriveled camellia bushes that lined the deck, the waxy leaves curled and crisp, the dying pink flowers scattered on the soil beneath. The arsonist spun around, staring one way and then the next, convinced somebody was laughing. It sounded like Naomi, a screechy laugh, like nails down a blackboard. Or was it Paul, a nasal mocking ha ha ha? The killer's blood boiled. Don't mock me. The wind died and the sound faded. Stay focused on the job. The pleasure comes later. In one hand, a small mallet with a rubber head. In the other, a wooden wedge-shaped doorstop, so small it looks as if it might belong to a doll's house. A couple of taps with the mallet and the wedge was jammed tight into the gap between the sash window and its casing. First, the top panel of glass and then the bottom panel were rendered inoperable. That was the last of the windows jammed, bar one, and that one would be the killer's escape route. The little wooden wedges were perfect for the job. They ensured the windows couldn't be opened from the inside, and they would also disintegrate in the fire, therefore leaving no evidence behind. Because this was going to be a tragic accident. The gas stove left on, a candle burning. How very sad, they would say. Now to lock the doors and start the fire. Carefully coating a square cotton handkerchief with honey, the arsonist stuck the handkerchief to the sash window pane just above the latch. One punch and the panel of glass fell into the living room, landing on carpet, the crack muffled by the sticky handkerchief. A moment's pause. Had anyone heard? Then sliding a gloved hand through the hole, the sash lock was unfastened and the lower window lifted. By now, the killer's latex-covered palms were slick with sweat. Once inside the house, the killer momentarily enjoyed the cool air conditioning before creeping along the corridor towards the kitchen. Bedroom doors were closed. Snoring came from the parents' room. Stepping softly to avoid making squeaking noises on the kitchen's hardwood floor, the arsonist headed straight for the wooden rack on the wall where they kept their house keys. The rack had a family of owls carved into the top of it. Distracted by the rack's tasteless quaintness, the arsonist accidentally kicked the leg of a baby's high chair. It scraped across the floor and hit the wall with a thud. The killer's hand slid into the belt's holster and touched the reassuring solidity of the pistol, which was an insurance policy. Nobody stirred. A big exhalation. Tugging the mask down, the intruder opened the fridge and took out a carton of milk and drank from it, relishing its cool creaminess. There was no need to worry about leaving behind DNA or fingerprints. There would be nothing left. However, being a careful type, the empty carton was returned to the fridge and the face mask pulled back into position. There were two sets of house keys on the rack and a spare set in a kitchen drawer. The arsonist took all three sets, locked all exterior doors, then switched on the gas stove's four burners. There was a satisfying hiss. Knowing that gas sinks, a candle was placed on the hardwood floor and lit. No need for accelerant this time. The explosion would blow the kitchen apart. The killer crept back along the hallway, careful to avoid a toddler's blue tricycle. Running into the nearest tree cover, the arsonist fumbled for a cigarette and used a brush chrome Zippo to light it, then threw it into the paper dry leaf litter. The yellow flames grew quickly. Two more cigarettes were lit and flicked away at different points around the bungalow. Lighting up the forest around the home was a precautionary measure. It would make it more difficult for firefighters to reach the house to save the occupants. The executioner kept a safe distance, but was near enough to watch the performance. Ribbons of red flames in the trees, a boom from the kitchen, black smoke, screams. Ah, those screams. Music to the ears. Eyes shut, right hand raised as if holding a baton to conduct an invisible orchestra. The killer waved a hand back and forth. A shudder of exquisite ecstasy. More screams. Their final wails consumed by the jet engine roar conflagration.